Thank you. Good afternoon or good morning to those of you on the West, and welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series. My name is Jennifer Simone, and I'll be moderating today's seminar. Today's topic is an overview of the Draft Highway Primary Freight Network. Before I go any further, I do want to let those of you who are calling into the teleconference for the audio know that you do need to mute your computer speakers, or else you'll be hearing the audio over the computer as well. Today we'll have two presenters, Ed Stracco and Coral Torres, both of the FHWA Office of Freight Management and Operations. Ed Stracco works in the FHWA Office of Freight Management and Operations, where he is a team leader for policy, research, and analysis. He has served as FHWA's Tiger Program Coordinator and manages several large infrastructure programs, including projects of national and regional significance. Ed focuses on freight performance measures, urban freight issues, freight policy, economics, and finance. He is the co-chair of TRB's Freight Planning and Logistics Committee. Prior to joining FHWA, Ed was the manager of multimodal studies for the Maryland Department of Transportation. He also worked as a land use and community planner for a number of jurisdictions. Coral Torres is a transportation specialist with the FHWA Freight Management Office and manages several programs and projects such as the Peer-to-Peer Exchange Program, the Off-Hour Delivery Study, and the National Freight Network Designation. Coral started her career working as a highway designer and construction inspector for local and state agencies in Puerto Rico. She later became a research and teaching assistant at the University of Puerto Rico and Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, where she worked on several key projects such as the Off-Peak Freight Deliveries to New York City project and Sustainable Freight Logistics Oakland, California case study. She later became one of the co-founders of the sustainable logistics company Green Guidance. Her career with the federal government started as a PDP highway engineer at the Federal Highway Georgia Division Office. She also serves as the Highway Performance Monitoring System Size and Weight Program Manager and Temporary Everyday Counts Coordinator in the state of Pennsylvania, where she assisted in the development of the State Transportation Innovation Council, which FHWA has instituted as exemplary for other states. Today's webinar will feature approximately 30 minutes of presentations discussing the Draft Highway Primary Freight Network, including an overview of the Primary Freight Network guidelines and a discussion about the routes included in the Primary Freight Network designation. The remainder of the time will be for audience question and answer. Today's webinar will last 90 minutes. If during the presentations you think of a question, please type it into the chat area. Please make sure you send your questions to everyone and indicate which presenter your question is for. The presenters will not be answering the questions during the presentation, but I'll start off the Q&A session with the questions typed into the chat box. We will also take questions over the phone, and the operator will provide instructions on how to do so. If we run out of time and are unable to address all questions, we'll attempt to get written responses from the presenters. The PowerPoint presentation used today is available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen. The presentations will also be available online within the next few weeks, along with a recording and transcript, and I'll notify all attendees once the materials are available. One final note, Talking Freight seminars are eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits. For AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today's seminar, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you're attending with a group of people, type your first and last name into the chat box. I've included more detailed instructions in the file share box on how to obtain your credits. Today's webinar is not yet available on the AICP website, but I will send out a notice once it is. And for those of you who are not AICP members but would like to receive credits for today's webinar, please note that FHWA does not formally offer PDHs. However, it may be possible to receive credits for your participation if you are able to self-certify. To possibly receive PDHs, please download the agenda from the file download box and submit it to your respective licensing agency. Finally, I encourage everyone to please download the evaluation form from the file share box and submit it to me after you filled it out. So we'll now go ahead and get started, and I'm going to turn it over to Ed Stracco of the FHWA Office of Freight Management and Operations.
Thank you, Jennifer. And hello to everybody. It's great to be with you today. I know this has been a long time coming, and we're very excited to finally have a draft out. We can take a breather and let you guys do the hard work for a few weeks, because there are a lot of issues, as you will see, that still need to be addressed and answered, and we really need a lot of really good, robust comments from you. So your hard work is just beginning. We're going to do Talking Freight a little bit differently than we normally do. We're going to have a presentation, probably about a half hour, and then spend the rest of the time answering questions and having a discussion. I'm going to start off, I'm going to talk about some background and issues, and then Coral's going to talk about the designation process, the methodology, the data, and a couple next steps here. So let's get right into it here. So to get everybody oriented here, National Freight Network is something that was created in Map 21, Section 1115 of Map 21. It's now part of Title 23 of the U.S. Code, Section 167. I think the big thing to take away from this slide is what Map 21 says, and it's really in that second line, strategically directing resources towards improving system performance for efficient movement of freight. And that's the direction that we've gotten from Map 21. So let's go to the next slide and see what the National Freight Network is made up of. A bunch of new terms here. We talked about these earlier in some prior Talking Freights, but the National Freight Network is really three different components. We have the primary freight network, which we're going to talk about today. We have the critical rural freight corridors, and we have the remainder of the interstate. So the primary freight network is something designated by USDOT, and it has mileage caps, 27,000 miles for roads of current importance, plus an optional 3,000 miles for future importance to be built or unbuilt. And then we have the critical rural freight corridors, and those are designated by the state DOTs, and you'll see the criteria that makes them eligible, and there are unlimited miles there. And then they have this third piece, which is the remainder of the interstate, and we don't know exactly where that'll be, but it'll be between 17,000 and 47,000 approximately if we designated, those are the two extremes there, if we designated the entire primary freight network as interstate, it would be on the 17,000 side. If we designate none of the interstate on the primary freight network, it would be on the 47,000 mile side. I think in reality it's going to be somewhere in the middle there, as you'll see the mix of interstate and non-interstate roads here. So turning to the primary freight network itself, some of the language that was in Map 21 for the designation. Some of the general language, you saw this on that second slide there, focus on the NHS, Aerotropolis, intermodal connectors, they're important. And then it also said we should be basing this on inventory of national freight volume conducted by Federal Highway. It also gave us eight or nine, there are actually nine in there because it's one has a double tonnage and value in there. We count that, it's counted as one, but there's actually two in there. And then you have origins and destinations, AADTT, percent AADTT, ports of entry, both land and maritime, and energy areas, a bunch of different ones there, population centers, and finally network connectivity. So a lot of different factors to consider as we designate this network. I'm going to throw up the critical rural freight corridors, talk about this just briefly. There are the three criteria here that states can use in their designation. First is the rural principal arterials, and that deals with percent trucks. The second one, similar to the PFN, deals with energy areas. And then the third one, I would say this is somewhat analogous to the freight intermodal connectors on the NHS. You're looking at a facility that handles a certain amount of freight, either 50,000 tons of bulk or 50,000 TEUs a year, and how that connects back to either the interstate, the PFN, or either one or two of the rural principal arterials with the percent truck there or energy areas. At the end, we'll talk a little bit more about the schedule for that, but we need to finish up the PFN before we can ask the states to give some consideration to the critical rural freight corridors. Right now, we're working with a work group of ASHTO and our division offices to help us think through the guidance that will go out probably in early 2014. So as we get into our discussion, some of the thinking that we've had to do over the last year deals with the National Freight Network role and what it is. A couple things on here. We recognize that the United States freight system is complex. It's complex, it's multimodal. You have to have rail, water, highway, air, all working together. And it's going to be even more important that they all work together and they're all available and viable options as we go forward. As we know, we're going to have more bulk goods and high velocity goods to move in the coming years. So, with that said, this network, the primary freight network, and the national freight network is a highway-only piece. So we are very aware that this is not the full system. It's a system that Map 21 asks us to designate, but there are other pieces to it. Going back to what I first said about why we're doing this and the strategic direction of resources, that's basically the only direction there. You know, the lack of how that would be applied raises a lot of questions. People have said, well, we need to be on the primary freight network because that's the only way we can get funding, or there's a funding program attached to this, or I'm only going to be eligible for the enhanced federal share under Section 1116, or these are going to be truck corridors. They're not going to be anything. This is no relationship to any funding, any other programs. Enhanced federal share has no relationship to any of the national freight network right now. What we're really solving for is your system performance and system efficiency. And as we think through that, another question what we've struggled with is, well, what is this? Should it be a system that is the backbone, the core of the nation's freight system, the really high volume corridors? Should it solve for our biggest issues, which may be urban goods movement and freight congestion? There are a lot of different questions out there, and how you answer that really impacts what kind of network you develop there. Ultimately, we're going to have our goal here is to really designate a highway primary freight network that's going to improve the system performance, and it's going to have those links and those hooks to those other modes, whether it's through an intermodal connector or filling in a gap there. But we want to make sure that as we think about this complicated, complex, multimodal system, this piece that we're designating now links up to all those other modes. So I started to talk about this on the last slide about possible future applications and the future role. And here's really where your comments come into play. We really need to hear from you in the formal comment period when you submit your comments to the docket. You know, how do you use the NFN? What's the purpose of the primary freight network? Is it related to the strategic freight plan? Is it part of a larger North American system? As I mentioned before, is it about intercity routes? Is it solving for areas of high congestion? Does it need to be connected, or can it be unconnected? How do we use performance measures? Should we be measuring performance on this? How should we be doing that? And is funding tied to it in the future? Should it be? Some of the things to think about there. I think the other thing we really need to hear from you on is how this fits into that larger multimodal system. Maybe you could call it the national freight system, the rail and the waterway, and what's that relationship? But we really don't have a good sense of that now. As we've been going through, we've noticed a lot of limitations. And the first one we talked about before, it's highway only, it's not multimodal. I don't think I need to dwell on that, but it's definitely something that's on our mind. The second one is that you saw those 8 or 9 factors for designation. There are infinite number of possibilities for what the system could look like. And we've done hundreds of different runs and comparisons, a whole lot of different permutations. And there's no right answer. The last thing is the 27,000-mile cap. This is not necessarily a magic number. It's not necessarily representative of highway system that we might need to meet all of our logistics needs in this country. We have to think about that constraint. I have a series of maps that I'm going to walk you through and kind of illustrate these points. The first one is a 2008 freight story map. It's an updated version. One of the things we did early on was ask, where did that 27,000 miles come from? And it seemed like very reasonable that it was drawn from our 2008 freight store that had a major freight corridors map of 27,500 miles. Of that, about 26,000 were a highway and 1,500 were bulk rail and waterways. So we went back and redid that, the same methodology basically, with updated numbers from 2011. And just on the highway only portion, which we had a threshold of 8,500 trucks, or if you had a parallel rail line, we converted the coffsy-toffsy on that line to truckloads to get to see if it was above or below 8,500. And so what used to be 26,000 miles became about over 31,000 miles if we left that 8,500 threshold the same. So even with the recession and all, we still see a growth there from 2007, which I think was the data we used. So that's just the one factor, just volumes there. So when you throw in those other factors, as you'll see, it becomes very complicated. The next map is one map we looked at, and it just has the truck tonnage from FAB. And we said, show us the top 27,000 miles of highway that based on tonnage. Then we did one based on value. Somewhat of a different picture, different routes there. We went and we did another one, just based on truck trips. We did AADTT, and we got a different picture yet. You can see it's very focused on the coasts, where you have a lot of population. And then another one is almost a mirror image. It's the percent AADTT. Where you have all those passenger vehicles on the coast, the percentage of trucks gets washed out, even though the volume's very high. But where you don't have a lot of vehicles in the middle of the country, that percent trucks really pops up there. So just four maps to show very different approaches if you use any one of those criteria single in a single sense. So if you start combining them, it gets very difficult. Another thing that we grappled with is the center line versus the corridor approach. And remember I mentioned that it's a major freight corridors map from the Freight Store 2008. And the thinking behind that was that there are some key trade lanes, and they're represented by a number of facilities throughout the modes. And that's very different than saying centerline miles, and when you start adding up the miles, they add up very differently. You think of a corridor from the ports in LA and Long Beach to the Inland Empire, you have a bunch of different roads going there and rail lines. Or if you think about the corridor between New York and Philadelphia, well, you have a number of options. You have New Jersey Turnpike, you have I-95, you have Route 9, you have a couple different rail lines there, CSX, NS, a bunch of other roads. So if you tried to pick out a specific facility, which one would you pick out? Or versus if you look at a corridor approach, you'd say this has a number of transportation assets and facilities in there that together make up an important corridor. The other thing with a corridor approach is it gives flexibility to the solution set. If we know it's an important trade lane, then if we pick a specific route, then we might be stuck focused on that route when patterns shift or the reason for that route changes and there might be a better route to focus on. So thinking about a corridor gives that flexibility. We need to move something from point A to B, but we're not going to define where it is. We just know we need to make it an improvement or need to make sure it's efficient. And that gets to part of Map 21 when we're talking about system performance. How are we going to improve the system and what are the options there? Let's not get locked into, I have a road and I need to be focused on the road. I need to be focused on system performance, and in this case, freight system performance. So how am I going to make the best decision there? So a corridor approach gives that flexibility. And we think there's a lot of merit to that, even though the law says we have to focus on center lines. Another thing we grappled with is the limitations of the national data. we know that the granularity that we need, especially in the urban areas, isn't necessarily there. We use the best national data we have available, and we think it's really good at a national level, a regional level, but when you get down to a local level, it can't tell you necessarily if I should be looking at Elm or Main Street. It just doesn't have that type of visibility. And so the question is, well, how do you deal with local data sets, and how do you keep a level playing field but have that granularity? If City A has done a whole lot of extra work and collected a lot more data, but they have the same type of freight activity, does that put City B at a disadvantage because they haven't, they don't have the resources or they haven't collected the data to fully understand their freight system there? Another one, I think the last big area I wanted to touch on is urban freight routes. When you look at the National Freight Network, and we have those three components we talked about, the primary freight network, the critical rural freight corridors, and the remainder of the interstate system. If you're in a rural area, you have three options. You might be part of the primary freight network, you might be the remainder of the interstate, or you might qualify as a critical rural freight corridor. If you're in an urban area, you're either an interstate or you have to be on that primary freight network, which is mileage constrained. It seems like there might be something missing, that analog to the critical rural freight routes. Should there be something similar to that, like critical urban freight routes in there, that kind of balances out, that may be important at the local regional level but may not raise to the level of the primary freight network? We think that it's probably something that is worthwhile for a lot of folks to consider and give us suggestions on what type of process that would look like and your thoughts on the whole urban issue. So we hope that we'll get some good thoughts on that. So I'm going to quickly go through the five areas for comments in the Federal Register notice we put out yesterday. And we really hope you are able to take the time to think through all these and put some good stuff in the docket for us. The first one is pretty straightforward. Specific routes for additions, deletions, or modifications. I think the one thing I like to say, and it kind of goes back to some of the struggles we've had, a number of calls and emails, informal comments in the 24 hours this notice has been out already, and a lot of them have been saying, oh, you missed my road, I need this route on there. So and that's looking at the 41,000 mile comprehensive map we put out. So we already have people who feel we've missed stuff. So you can see how difficult getting to 27,000 miles is. So definitely think about that. And when you think about it, I think it would be very helpful to us to not just say, please add this road, but give us the logic, the justification, so we can think through it. Well, this is why, or this is the data that supports it, or this is the rationale. And of course, we'd be very happy to see deletions because we know we need to trim this down somehow. Yeah, the second one is the methodology. As you'll hear from Coral, we took some steps to get to a 41,000 mile map, and then we trimmed it back to 27,000. But that is not the optimal or ideal map. We still need to do some thinking on that, and that's where we really need some help from everybody out there. What's the best methodology for that to achieve 27,000 miles? It seems like a big number, but when you start looking at the nation, it becomes pretty small. And then the last three we've already discussed. How does this fit into the bigger picture, the multimodal picture, the national freight system? How should this be used? What's its purpose? What it'll be used for in the future? And then the whole urban area route designation process that we just talked about. So with that, I'm going to stop and turn it over to Coral to talk about the process we've used and the actual designation itself.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, Ed. Throughout the next slides, I'm going to be talking about the process, the methodology, and the data we use for designated the draft initial highway primary freight network. The draft initial highway primary freight network was informed by measurable and objective national data. for the development of the draft initial highway PFN, the Federal Highway Administration considered the following criteria and data sources. So as you can see on this slide, we have a list of the data that we use for the development of the network. And we start over with origins and destinations of freight movements. For this, we use the freight analysis framework data that we have here in the Office of Freight Management and Operations. We use the latest version available, which is FAB 3.4, and that provides information of origins and destinations by states and zones. We also use FAB 3.4 for freight tonnage and value by highways. We are able to assign those values to the truck traffic flows that we have within the network. We also obtain data of, or use data for percentage of average annual daily truck traffic on principal arterials through the Highway Performance Monitoring System. We use the latest version once we started the designation process earlier this year. And at that time, the latest version that we had available was the 2011 HPMS data. We also use HPMS 2011 for average annual daily truck traffic on principal arterials. For land and maritime ports of entry, we use the following sources of information and data. The U.S. Department of Transportation Maritime Administration containers by U.S. Custom Ports, which identifies the top ports by TEUs and metric tonnage. We also use the U.S. DOT Bureau of Transportation Statistics transporter data, which we were able to identify the top border crossings by number of trucks that are crossing per year. And we also use the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Navigation Data Center data, which is data for those facilities that is geocoded or georeferenced. So some sort of shapefile in which we're able to actually see the location of those facilities. For airports, we use the Federal Aviation Administration CT 2011 cargo airports by land and weight, which is similar to the list that we have for ports. The FAA Aeronautical Information Services airport database in the National Transportation Atlas database. And that way, we were able to geocode or georeference those facilities with the list that we have by land and weight. We also had information about access to energy exploration, development, installation, or production areas. The United States Energy Information Administration, under the Department of Energy, provided us with a series of maps for specific locations of for energy production and installation. And also provided us with maps of regions such as shales and basins for future areas of energy exploration. We also use Panel map search data via Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. The next set of data that we utilized was population centers, and we used the latest census data, which is 2010. And this is a shape file that has all the information in terms of population and ties that information to all the population centers in the United States. For network connectivity, we used FAB 3.4. For intermodal connectors, we used the Federal Highway Administration National Highway System intermodal connectors, which is, again, a shape file with information of those connectors. And finally, for railroads, we use the Federal Railroad Administration Analysis of Rail Inc. Centralized Station Master Data. If you have a chance and can go over the Federal Register Notice that we have posted on our website here in Holcomb, and it's also available on the Federal Register Notice website, you're going to be able to see that there's a table with all the information that I just mentioned, and where to locate that information is accessible to all the public. Most of the data that we use you can find on a series of web links that we provided, with the exception of some data that you can ask BTS to provide, as well as some of the rail data as well. But all of the information is publicly available. So now let's talk a little bit about the draft initial highway primary freight network methodology. The methodology employed by the United States Department of Transportation in developing this draft initial highway PFN included the following steps. And before I jumped into this, as Ed mentioned, we took a lot of time to do research with the data that I just mentioned. We did a lot of research in terms of understanding what the data was telling us, what kind of trends we can see based on the different criteria that Congress provided us to work with. So based on all the work we did and all the different scenarios that we developed, for example, developing maps based only on average annual daily truck traffic and percent of trucks, or a map of only tonnage and value, and all the infinite number of combinations that we worked with here in our office, we came to a conclusion that the best option that we could develop for a methodology was to provide the most comprehensive network by using all of the criteria that was provided to us by Congress. So the methodology that I'm going to talk about now in a second, I think is the best fit for an optimal solution for this problem. So we start with obtaining the top 20,000 miles of road segments that qualify in two of the following four factors: value, tonnage, annual average daily truck traffic, and percentage of truck traffic. The reason why we selected 20,000 miles instead of 27, you would ask yourself, is because as we were doing our research and developing maps and try to comply with that statutory cap, we saw that the more criteria we added into the methodology, the more we went over the statutory cap. So we, in order for us to include as much criteria as possible into the methodology, we had to reduce our scenarios to 20,000 miles in order to do so. The other thing is the reason why we created a constraint in which only the links or the roads that you see on the map comply with two out of the four criteria that I just mentioned is because, again, we ran a series of scenarios and we saw that if we use three out of four or four out of four of the criteria, we were just getting a very limited amount of miles in that map, and we don't think that's the intent of what Congress is trying to obtain through this map, through this network. If we did one out of four, then we were going over the statutory cap by a big number. So we found that the best solution at the time was to select the links or the roads that comply with two out of the four criteria that I just mentioned. The second step was to do network connectivity by length of gaps and segments. So once we were able to develop the network with the criteria I mentioned above, we're still going to have some gaps. We're not going to have a connected network. And we wanted to get to something that was had continuity and had a logic behind it. And also through data, there's always some errors here and there with data, what we call outliers, that we need to fix in order to provide a feasible product at the end of the day. So we were able to get rid of those outliers by analyzing the length of the segments in comparison to the other segments surrounding the outliers. And also, if a segment was too far away from what we call the trunk or the main system, we got rid of those segments as well. So we created a rule that says that if it takes if it's 400 miles away from that trunk within a one-day driving distance, then it's going to be too cumbersome to connect to, and it's going to take too much mileage in terms of connectivity. So the next step was to include land ports of entry with truck traffic higher than 75,000 trucks per year. We saw that when we developed the map, we had some gaps in the northern region and southern region of the country, specifically in the borders there. So we used the data from ETS to provide connectivity to those key points of entry in and out to the country for the movement of goods into and out of the country. So we were able to do that by adding those land ports of entry. The fourth step was to incorporate intermodal connectors in top 50 airports by landed weight within urban areas with a population of 200,000 or more. So we added information that we have here from the Office of Planning to identify all connectivity issues that we had in the urban areas with all of those key freight facilities that are the ones that generate the freight flows within those critical urban areas of 200,000 or more. And the next step was to finally close all the gaps that we had in the map. And by doing so, we created a rule in which we identify key segments or routes with a high level of truck traffic. So any segment that we were missing, if it complies with only having 8,500 trucks per day as AADTT, we were able to generate that rule that closed out all of the other gaps that we have within urban areas and in other parts of the country as well. So through step 1 through 5, we were able to create a very comprehensive network. And after we did this, we did some statistical and descriptive analysis in order to analyze and determine the relationship to population centers, origins and destinations, maritime ports, airports and rail yards, and some of the other minor network connections. So we were able to see what was the relationship with all of the other modes and population centers and origins and destination, and we were able to see that we had a very good comprehensive network that had a good coverage in terms of all of those criteria and facilities. The next step we did was to address the situation with Alaska, Hawaii, and Puerto Rico. It's somewhat different from the other states. They're not part of the mainland, so we understand that it's, you know, airports, ports, and other freight facilities are key for the movement of commodities into those territories and states. We included all roads connecting to key ports, airports, and intermodal connectors to population centers in Alaska, Hawaii, and Puerto Rico. And the last step was to analyze the network to determine the relationship to energy exploration, development, installation, and production areas. So it was something very similar to what we did in step number 6. In this case, we were able to see with the maps that were provided by the Department of Energy and other information that the majority of the facilities and the regions that are in relationship to energy exploration, development, installation, and production are located in rural areas. So it's very difficult to provide connectivity to exploration region, a shale basin that covers 5 states. So our understanding is that through the critical role freight corridor designation that will be happening within the next couple of months, we will be able to designate connectivity to those key facilities and regions for energy exploration, development, installation, and production. So after we went over this methodology, the final product was a comprehensive map of 41,518 center line miles, in which 37,436 miles are interstate miles and about 4,000 miles are non-interstate miles. Since the statute limits the highway primary freight network to 27 miles only, the United States Department of Transportation then identified those segments with the highest AADTT in order to comply with the statutory cap. And it's very important that we understand the difference between the 41K network, as we call it here, and the 27K. The 41K network is a map that is fully connected. It's a network. It's a very comprehensive network that includes freight facilities, and it has, again, continuity and logic behind it. And it represents the story of what freight is in this country. The 27,000-mile map is derived out of that map. So we set up an additional constraint in which we identify the roads with high levels of truck traffic within that 41K network. By doing so, we were able to obtain a disconnected network that shows segments that are critical in terms of the level of truck traffic that are traveling through those, but that also comply with the criteria and the methodology that I mentioned before. So again, this road segments represented on the draft highway primary freight network map comprise of around 26,966 miles of center line roads. So we're very close to the statutory cap. And this mileage reflect consideration of the criteria offered by Congress. So as what you can see on the next slide is the final product or the map that we developed here. And what we have here is both the 41K network and the 27K network. The 41K network, or the comprehensive network, would be both all the links, what you see in orange and purple. Now, the highway primary freight network, the 27K mile network, are only the segments that you see in purple. So as you can see, the entire map is connected, but when you look at the purple segments, you're going to see some segments here and there that are disconnected, and you're going to see gaps in the system. So again, we're asking from you to comment on the methodology, the data we utilize, and the final product that we're presenting here today, if you think it fits the intent of what was written in the law, or what the use of this information is going to be for in the future. Additional miles on the highway primary freight network, the Secretary of Transportation under Section 167 of Title 23 of USC may increase the highway PFN by up to 3,000 centerline miles above the 27K statutory cap mentioned in the law, in order to accommodate existing or planned roads critical to future efficient movement of goods in the highway primary freight network. In the draft that we presented here today, the U.S. Department of Transportation focused on freight routes that are critical to the current movement of freight. But DOT is aware that of emerging freight routes that will be critical to the future efficient movement of goods, and believes that there is value in expanding the highway PFN for the inclusion of those routes. So we, again, are taking comments in regards to that, in terms of what we should do with the additional 3,000 mileage that Congress is providing us to increase the mileage to 30,000. All the information that we presented today can be accessed through the National Freight Network website that we developed here in the Freight Office Management and Operations of the Federal Highway Administration. We have maps, the draft initial highway PFN map, including both the 27K and the 41K networks. We also have state maps and list of all the routes that we're designating in both of the networks. We have tables with information about mileage by state and information regarding intermodal connectors and border crossings. And these are the links. The first link is the link that you can find all of the information that I just mentioned. We have more in detail information, 20-page Federal Register notice that talks about the methodology and all the other information that Ed mentioned earlier today. You can find that notice at the following website that you see here on the link on the PowerPoint presentation. And also, it is very important, all the comments that you wish to share with us. We are accepting comments through the docket, the link that we have here at the bottom of the slide. So please, if you have any comments in regards to the five areas or questions that Ed mentioned earlier, please make sure to submit those comments through that website in order for those comments to be considered. This is just a slide with that shows the PFN website and the information that is available right now in the website. And this is a sample of one of the state maps that we have. In this case, it's for Maryland. So you can see we have information for both of the networks, border crossings, and other freight and intermodal facilities in there as well. And this is an example of the tables that we have on the website with the information for the routes, the starting endpoints, and the mileage, as well as other freight facilities, population centers, border crossings, etc. So the next steps here are we just published the draft designation of the highway PFN. So the next steps will be to for you guys to provide comments. And we're giving right now 30 days for you to do so. So we're anticipating to receive comments by the end of fall of 2013. And then when we receive the comments, we will review and analyze all of those comments, and we anticipate to do so by early 2014. Once we analyze all of the comments, we'll make adjustments and modifications based on the information that you're suggesting. And we will develop the final initial highway primary freight network sometime early 2014. The finalization of the critical rule freight corridors guidance is anticipated to go out as well in early 14. So all the state DOTs, please pay close attention to that information, which will be critical for the designation process of those routes. Next step will be to request for states to designate the CRFC. So the state DOTs will be working on that designation during the spring of 2014. And then the state DOTs will be compiling all the designated routes by spring 2014 as well. The release of the initial designation of the full national freight network, including the highway PFA, the remainder of the interstate system, and the state designated critical rural freight corridors will happen sometime in mid-2014. With that said, that's all the information that we have today. And as Ed mentioned, we want to change things here a little, and we want to hear from you what you think of the information we presented, our methodology, the data, the approach that we have here for designating the highway primary freight network.